Welcome back. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm your host, Tammy Martin. I hope you're having a wonderful, fantastic Wednesday. Thank you so much for listening this morning. If you have any questions or comments, please don't hesitate to call or text 437-1620. I have the pleasure of having Terry Gross, the attorney for Gross & Schuster, on the phone. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, and I'm always got a topic. But if someone wants to text us or call us, what's that number once again?
It is 437-1620.
Perfect. So I've been on the radio here for a long time. Actually, I started talk radio in 1981. Ironically, that's when I also opened up my office. I graduated law school in 1979. Worked for somebody else for a year and a half until I decided to go out on my own, and the rest is history, as they would say. My topic today, we'd have to get into a time capsule and go back to 1971, because there's something about 1971 that impacts my practice every day of the week. I live and breathe it, and it was the law, became law in 1971. It's the law today. And that is when they passed the no-fault law. So it was passed in 1971, and it simply said that even if you're rear-ended and the accident is totally not your fault, your company will be responsible for the first $10,000 of your medical bills at 80%. Now, there are those who say that makes no sense, but back then, a lot less of us had health insurance, so what did you do about the bills? Your credit was ruined. Because insurance companies, even today, don't pay as you go. They pay one time and one time only when you're willing to sign the release, letting them off the hook forever. So if we have cases going 3 and 4 years, my clients don't get a dime from the defendant until the case is settled. So the no-fault system was a stopgap measure meant to help the little guy out, give them a little bit of relief. There was also a lost wage component in there as well, and it still exists today. But the reason I'm talking about this is that the insurance companies were obviously irate. They got the safest driver in the world. They get a very low premium because they're rewarded for their safe driving. And yet if they're rear-ended, the company would be exposed to paying up to $10,000 in their medical bills, even though they're not at fault. So the insurance companies were beyond irate, and they bitched and moaned with the legislature, and finally the legislature threw them a bone. And the bone is what lawyers would call the no-fault threshold. What the heck is that? In no-fault threshold, there's many ways to cross it, but the primary focus of my practice is even today in 2023, if someone comes in for a whiplash, let's say, I know from day one that ultimately I'm going to have to prove a permanent injury. A permanent injury is required under Florida law since 1971 before a person can get pain and suffering damages, which would include mental anguish and loss of capacity to enjoy their life and so on, intangible damages, damages other than medical bills or lost wages. So that sometimes becomes the feature of the case. People maybe don't have a lot of outstanding medical bills. Maybe they don't have lost wages. But maybe if they wake up every day in pain because of the accident, or they can no longer bowl, they can no longer play tennis or golf or something they really, really enjoyed before the accident, that's a big damage to me. It's an important damage, but you can't get anything in Florida unless a jury ultimately determines that the damages are permanent. So when we go to court, mainly under whiplash cases, so I'm not talking about broken bones and surgery cases because permanency is usually not an issue in those, but when you go and you say, my neck hurts and my back hurts, it can be very true, very real, but all those whiplashes have something in common. It doesn't matter if you're black or white, rich or poor, male or female, the common denominator is the injuries are invisible. So my job in those cases is to prove permanent, invisible injuries. Now, some would say it's easier said than done, but it's how do we do it? How do we go about doing that? Well, a lot of it has to do with the doctors you see. And if you saw a chiropractor, for instance, most chiropractors are cooperative, and most do believe in permanent, even if the MRIs are fairly normal, they believe in permanent stretching of ligaments or minor tears that can't be seen on the MRI that could be permanent, permanent weakness, permanent shifting of the vertebrae or whatever it may be. It's called a subluxation. So that usually chiropractic testimony is not much of a problem. Historically, when I was a young lawyer, there were very few medical doctors that would even get involved in a so-called whiplash case. And as a result, it created some dilemmas. Today, back when I started, I mean, if you'd asked me in 1980, what's a pain management physician, I would say, what are you talking about? I don't know what a pain management physician is. But today, they're very prevalent. And pain management doctors are medical doctors. They are usually anesthesiologists that elected not to put you to sleep in the operation room, but to go out with the public, see people, and try to reduce their pain, either through various medications and very often with injections. And there's many, many types of injections. And so they treat a lot of people with so-called whiplashes and to various degrees. Sometimes it's what I call light pain management. Sometimes it's heavy, heavy pain management where people are getting epidurals repeatedly or what we call RFA procedures or denervations where the long needles are being inserted into the disc under fluoroscopy to try to get the medicine right into the spot where there appears to be an injury. And so they tend to be witnesses over time, and a medical doctor's testimony may be better received by a jury. And then, of course, there are sometimes orthopedists or neurosurgeons that get involved, but they're few and far between. And a lot of that usually goes down to what we call an objective MRI. Now, when I first started, maybe in 1980, I knew what an MRI was, but they weren't very prevalent. They weren't the go-to type of diagnostic procedure that they are today. And they're certainly a lot better today than they were back then, 40-something years ago. But yeah, an MRI can't lie. So the first thing about an MRI, it cannot lie. Whatever it shows. Now, I have noticed that certain MRI machines are different. Some are stronger, some are newer. The radiologists differ. They have their own nomenclature. And I had a case where a young man had a whiplash to his neck. And by the end of the case, he had three different radiologists testify and three different surgeons testify. And they all had different opinions. And some would call an abnormality a bulge. And another person said, no, that's not a bulge. That's a protrusion. And the next guy goes, that's not a protrusion. That's a herniation. Can't you see this, this, and this? And if I were to show you an x-ray of a broken bone and you had no education at all, it'd be very clear, unless it's a very subtle, hairline fracture. But I'm talking about a real broken bone. You would look at it and go, oh, my God, that's a broken bone. When you get these MRIs, we blow them up for trial, and the radiologist testifies, and the jury's kind of looking at it. I don't know what they can see or tell, because I've looked at them myself, and the findings are very subtle. And what they're looking at, you see a little hump, and they're describing, is that a herniation, a bulge, a protrusion, and so forth. So this is some of the controversies we have. So it's a dogfight on these so-called whiplashes as to permanency, because the insurance companies know that if they can convince those jurors that it's not permanent, and think about the word permanent. The word permanent means forever, never get better. So you could end up in a jury trial. The jury could like you maybe and think you were injured and all that. And maybe you're in your late 20s, early 30s, and they're thinking, oh, she'll get better. I think it's only been 3 years, and over time people get better. we think should get better. It's not permanent. And little do they realize that once they say it's not permanent, the judge is going to intervene and say, you cannot award this person anything for pain and suffering, even though they had it. Everybody knows they were in a lot of pain. You get nothing. You get nothing for mental anguish. And most importantly to me, you get nothing for loss of capacity to enjoy your life. And I injured my low back in tennis when I was in my 30s. And again, nobody to sue. It was a sports injury, and I've lived with it. But it's altered my life tremendously. So today I'm in my 60s. I can no longer jog because it just aggravates the stew of that bad back disc. I quit basketball. I quit tennis. All my kids are playing tennis. I would love to play tennis. I was pretty good at tennis. But if I go out there, I know the next day I'm getting injections. It's just a lot, you know, to pay for just to try to enjoy a little bit of fun with the family. So it's just something I gave up, and, you know, life goes on. I would be irate if that injury had come from some inattentive driver that rear-ended me and just took that away from me. Those are real damages. And I've had people that either they couldn't play golf anymore, or maybe they were so proud that they got their handicap down to maybe a 78, which is usually, you know, six over par. So, you get a six handicap is a really good handicap, and most golfers would aspire to that. And all of a sudden you get a back injury, and you don't play as much, and now you're shooting 80s and 90s. You're not happy, and that is a loss. It's hard to put a dollar figure on it, but it's all keyed into the word permanency. So it's always a dogfight. And some of these cases, maybe there's not as much damage to the vehicle as one would think. If there's not much damage to the vehicle, you could bet your bottom dollar that the insurance companies are going to blow up those pictures and parade them in front of the jury the entire time and talk about fender benders. Because we've all seen fender benders. Many of us have been through them with no injuries. But yet, I can tell you, as a matter of fact, I've had cases with so-called fender benders where people have had not just one surgery, but multiple surgeries. And, you know, cars are made of metal for the most part. Our discs are gelatinous. They're not even cartilage. I mean, a disc is just like a jelly donut. And when it gets compromised, that fluid, that jelly at the center comes out of it, and it deflates like a tire. And as that disc tends to deflate or desiccate, it drops. It's a shock absorber. And so it's like a tire on your bike. If you lose air in your tire on your bike, eventually you're going to have rim on concrete, which is not a great thing. Well, your vertebrae are like concrete. They're bone. And as they drop down because the disc is damaged, they start touching the nerve roots, and that's where people get what we call radicular pain, radiating pain that it's just like if you were watering your yard with your hose, and I came over, I was your neighbor, and I was just talking to you, and I accidentally stepped in the hose. All of a sudden, you're getting no water. I'm stepping on your hose. You got no water coming out, and you look at me, Terry, it's nice talking to you, but could you get off the hose? I'm trying to do something here. Well, when the bone hits that nerve root, it's like the foot on the hose. It can interrupt the signals and cause numbness in the extremities. It causes your hands not to work. Fingers feel numby and gummy and hard to pick up a coffee cup. And I've heard every kind of story from my clients. And then once they have the surgery, it jacks that vertebrae back up. But again, these are real injuries, but it's all predicated. You getting compensated is predicated on the lawyer's ability to prove permanency. And in my career, I have seen doctors who are biased against plaintiffs, who really were prone to sympathize with insurance companies. And it shows. I remember when I was a very young lawyer, I mean, really young, I'm representing this young girl, and what had happened was she saw that she was going to have a head-on collision, and like most of us, instinctively just jammed on the brakes. That's about all you could do. So she's jamming on the brakes. Then there's the frontal collision with her foot just jammed the brakes, and it shattered her heel. It's called a comminuted fracture. Comminuted, all that means is multiple fractures. And they had to put plates and screws in there. And when I went to take the doctor's deposition, of course, we had to talk about permanency, which I thought was going to be a no-brainer. He goes, no, it's not permanent. I fixed it. I went in, I fixed her ankle or her foot. It's good as new. I'm thinking plates and screws, and she's in her 20s. It's good as new. And it was stupid testimony, I thought, and the jury agreed with me. They just told ignore that doctor, thank goodness, because that was such an obvious permanent injury. But some are more subtle, especially when we get to whiplashes, and it becomes this debate. There is a radiologist out there in the state of Florida. We've been able to prove it. It took forever to prove this because he hid the money. Let me ask you this question. This guy testifies for insurance companies on MRIs, and he says everything is degenerative. Whenever you see the degenerative meaning pre-existing, how much could he possibly make a year? What do you think he makes a year testifying?
Ooh, I don't know that answer. It makes a year?
Yeah, what could he possibly make a year testifying for insurance companies that MRIs are normal?
Not enough for lying.
Well, what do you think? What do you think? What could it possibly be?
You want a number figure?
Yeah.
Let's see, 70,000.
6 million.
What?
Makes. Yes, that's what.
Wait,
I
wait
think.
A second.
I knew he made a lot.
I was thinking it wouldn't be that much.
I knew this guy was making a lot of money because we finally, you know, because in Florida we have rules of discovery that allow them to hide the ball. But you know, it wasn't just me. It was me and many, many lawyers taking deposition over time. We got a little bit, and one judge would allow this and, you know, whatever. But we finally figured out that of the major carriers, he was getting paid $1 million a year by Allstate, $1 million a year by Geico, $1 million a year by State Farm and all these big carriers. And every testimony he gave was the same. This is degenerative. I see nothing new. Whatever. And meanwhile, the surgeons who are treating this person said, wait a second, there's a herniated disc here. I mean, are you kidding me? It's such a nerve root, and you're saying there's nothing there?
So he got caught. Is he still doing it?
Oh, yeah. But when you say caught, he's very smooth. You got to understand how much he testifies.
He testifies
so much. He told me that he's in trial once a week, which is incredible. And he's mainly used in South Florida, a little bit up here. But, I mean, every week he's in trial, and he's good. I mean, he's a trained expert testifier.
Man.
Forget being a radiologist. So he's like a professor, and the juries kind of love him because he's got great hair, and he looks good. And, of course, the lawyer's allowed to cross-examine him on money to a certain extent, depending on what – and every judge is different about what they'll let us ask. But, no, this guy is a smooth operator, and that's why the insurance companies love him so much.
Well, that's so disheartening for the person that with the injury to hear that when they're in pain and someone's telling them there's nothing wrong.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not like a broken bone like I was talking about where, you know, the jury could see the x-ray and goes, oh, that's broken. Looky there. Because the jury could, you know, take the exhibits back to the room. They could put up the MRI and look at it, but they're not going to know how to read it. I mean, that's why we have radiologists. And even me, I know all the nomenclature. I could talk the talk. I'm not a radiologist. I mean, so if you have an MRI and you want me to look at the film and say, Terry, you know so much about this, look at the film and what do you see? I'm going to say, I'm the wrong guy. I'm a lawyer. I mean, go to a radiologist, you know. But I know the nomenclature. I mean, I'm very up on the words and the semantics and all that. I understand a lot, but I don't claim to be a radiologist. And again, these findings are so subtle what they're looking at, and they pinpoint it, and then you start to sort of see something. But still, sometimes it's just a leap of faith. You got to trust that they know what they're talking about because they're so far more educated in that area than me, and of course the jury. There's no doctors on the jury. There's no lawyers on the jury. There's no insurance adjusters or. It's just everyday people like yourself and our listeners that are listening to us, just everyday people trying to do the right thing and to get hit with this heavy, heavy stuff. And all of a sudden this expert pops in that sounds like he really knows what he's talking about, and he's articulate, and he's looking in the eye, and very convincing. We have a term of art. You know, we call those type of experts, we actually have a term of art. You may know the term once I say it, but
I don't. I don't know
whores.
It. Really?
Whore. A whore. They're, 'cause you pay them. You pay them for a service.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
They pick it up. So when a man sleeps in the prostitute, she doesn't love him. She's not dating him. Yeah, she gets money, and she does whatever he wants her to do. And that's the way this guy is. He's a whore. You give him money, and he'll testify. And he doesn't say anything.
So do the judges not know this about him, since you do? Since everyone should know about this by now.
The judges know that. But the judges don't make decisions like that. I mean, the insurance companies are allowed to hire. And then we have something called a CME. A CME is where it's called a compulsory medical examination. So it's where a person is seen by the insurance company's orthopedist, maybe on one occasion, and he'll so-called do an exam or whatever, and then he'll make up his mind and testify. And in that industry, there's many whores. Right now, there's a neurosurgeon out of Tallahassee that everybody's using. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's that convincing, but he testifies for insurance companies. And once they know about it, once the insurance companies hear, this guy will testify for us, then they line up. You know, it's like Joe Patties. They just line up.
Yeah.
You know, and say, hey, will you testify in this case? Will you testify in this case? And all of a sudden, they're making a ton of money.
Yeah. Wow. That's sad.
But we're out of time, aren't we?
We are.
So this is Terrence Gross. If you wish to call me at the office, it's 850-434-3333. We have a great website. Many of the things I talk about are on the website, grossandschuster.com. I also have podcasts. If you want to go ahead and Google Terrence Gross Attorney Podcast or something like that, I'm posting podcasts just like what we're talking about now. So if you're out walking, you got an earbud or whatever you want to do. If you're working out on a treadmill or you want to go to sleep and you have insomnia, just listen to my podcast and it'll help you.
Thank you so much, Terry, for joining me. And I hope you have a great rest of the day.